Makeshift Stories presents. The Other Story, a somewhat random collection of worlds, characters, and universes. This week's episode, A Hole in Space.
Epoko looked nervously at the troubled clouds. The lightning flashes were getting more frequent and intense. On any other world, lightning would have been a good sign of impending rain. On the desert world of Sikkis Terra, for example, the local residents had built an entire technology just to encourage brooding skies like the one behind Epoko. But Epoko didn't know about desert worlds or lightning that accompanied water falling from the sky. All he thought was, "It's going to come down hard tonight, and I'm happy my five hooves are warm." Then Epoko scurried for his modest dome shelter, an unusually large flash hastening his retreat. Luki desperately searched his cabin, haphazardly disturbing piles of crumpled and balled up clothes that hid almost every surface.
"Where's that sock?"
he muttered to himself.
"It's gotta be here."
He rummaged under his low sleeping bench, pushing his paw as far as he could into the dark recesses of the suspect's space.
"Ouch!"
Luki yanked his arm out. He could have sworn something under there tried to bite him. Frustrated, he gave up, found a pair of relatively clean, mismatched brown and green socks lying on top of a small hill of soiled eye-scare jumpsuits, smelled them to make sure, then hesitantly jammed them on. It was time to do laundry, Luki finally admitted. Zara loved the night shift. There was no one around. She could relax, avoid Luki and Len, and get down to the real business of running the ship. Things had settled down since their first mission, and she now felt that life aboard the Hypernova wasn't all that bad. Len had busied himself trying to improve the efficiency of the laundry room. What could go wrong with that, she had assured herself. And Luki was as self-absorbed as ever. He had recently mumbled something about writing his memoirs. Finally, thanks to her diligent work, their collection and recovery rates were amongst the highest in the Interstellar Collection and Retrieval Enterprises, or, as it was more commonly referred to, iSCARE fleet. At current prices for recycled drink containers, Zara had worked out that she could pay iSCARE back for covering her part of the debt from Luki's ill-fated Terran pickup mission in a couple of tours. In hindsight, Zara knew she should have been suspicious when Luki insisted that the drink machine on board the cruiser was giving stuff away. The fact that there was no word for free in the Triffle language was a compelling tip-off that at the time she had missed. In Triffle culture, everything costs something, and usually far more than one would expect. As it turned out, under Triffle law, even a casual acquaintance could be held responsible for another person's bad debt. So, most Triffle social events apparently started with an intense exchange of credit information. The long and the short of it was that when iSCARE had offered her the job, she really didn't have any choice. But being second in command gave her the ability to get the work done, and let Luki take the blame for the things that inevitably went wrong. So on the whole, the future looked pretty good. There was only one tiny, niggling problem. The entity Luki and Len had accidentally created from the rubble-eating nanobots on the last cleanup mission was still on the loose. Once the microscopic machines had linked together to form the artificial superintelligence, whose goal was to conquer the universe, they had all agreed not to mention it in their report to head office. When Ada refused, Len had simply edited the incident out of the AI's memory. He had also convinced the nanobot entity to start its mission of conquest in the neighboring dwarf galaxy of Canis Major. Zara was still a little uneasy about sending them there, but Len had insisted it would take 25,000 years to get to Canis Major. That would give him adequate time to figure out what to do about the nanobots. Still, she had a lingering bad feeling that a lot could go wrong in 25,000 years. But for now, Zara put her misgivings aside and went back to work.
Ada, I've just input a revised mission plan. Please update the navigation computer.
Yes, certainly, First Officer Zara, right away.
No complaining. I wonder if Len's been playing around with Ada's personality again.
Lukey struggled to pull his laundry bag down a dimly lit battleship gray utility corridor.
Why do they always put laundry rooms in the most remote and depressing places?
He wondered aloud.
Is it my imagination, or has this bag gotten heavier?
It's not your imagination, sir.
Ada's unexpected tinny announcement made Lukey jump.
You've been missing your regular workouts, sir. And it's one of my duties to make sure the captain is in tip-top shape. So I've increased the gravity in the hull to help kickstart your new exercise program. I am also happy to note that you are finally doing laundry. I can now have your room fumigated.
Ada's impertinent voice echoed off the bare metal walls.
When's Len gonna fix your personality?
Lukey growled.
He already did, sir. I am told that I am now very cooperative and ready to serve.
He and I need to talk.
Exhausted and perspiring, Lukey arrived at the entrance to the laundry room. The door had been removed and was lying against the hallway wall. Beside it, a small, hastily written warning was taped. Upgrades in progress. Use at own risk. Lukey turned to face his large stained laundry bag that now looked like it was being sucked through the metal deck plates onto the extra gravity. Briefly considered the work involved in hauling it back to the elevator, then decided to take his chances.
What can go wrong? A few wrecked jumpsuits or a mangled sock or two?
Lukey reflected as he bent down, grabbed hold of the bag's stressed handles, then struggled into the room. Wire, power, and control cables hung from the ceiling like spaghetti. Machine parts and panels lay strewn across the floor. Lukey looked around in confusion. At the moment, the room appeared to be more like a disorganized parts depot than a place to wash dirty clothes. Almost hidden under the piles of disused circuit boards and odd-shaped, nameless parts, Lukey found what looked like a washer, opened what looked like a place to put clothes, then, with all his remaining strength, shoved and stuffed his bag's contents into the suspect machine. The opening slammed shut with the extra force of the enhanced gravity, narrowly missing Lukey's paws. Exhausted, he fell back against the wall, then noticed that Len hadn't reattached the credit slots yet.
Well, something's looking up. Laundry's going to be free this month.
Lukey smiled, then let the churning rhythm of the washer lull him to sleep. The hypernova shuddered slightly as it slowed down and re-emerged into what most people agreed to be normal space-time. Lukey woke with a start.
Good afternoon, crew. We are now 3 AUs away from our next job site. Status meeting will be in 20 minutes. As usual, coffee and tea will be served for a small fee.
Ada's voice squawked out of the intercom. Lukey looked down at his legs and wondered why he was still dressed in pajamas with mismatched socks. Slowly, his mind came back into focus. He had been doing laundry and must have fallen asleep, but he needed some clothes fast. Lukey eyed the washing machine suspiciously. It sat aloof and smugly silent.
Okay, well, at least in theory, everything is washed.
Lukey desperately scanned the room for something to dry his clothes in. With Len, it was hard to know what a clothes dryer might look like. He spotted a meter-wide silver cylinder that looked like the air intake of a large turbine protruding from the outer hull of the ship, decided that it was the closest thing to a dryer in the room, then frantically tossed his clothes in. The lid, or more accurately, the hatch, dramatically hissed shut. At first, nothing happened.
Verifying.
Then the machine hummed and considered the task at hand for a few seconds before lighting up a small touchscreen on which it proudly presented several options. Fluff, 3 hours. Gently toss, 2 hours. Regular, 1 hour. Recommended. Hyperdry, 3 minutes. Without another thought, Lukey hit hyperdry. Too late, as alarms started to echo through the hypernova, he saw the fine print. Hyperdry, extremely unstable, not recommended. For a brief instant, the left half of Lukey's body felt like it was 10,000 light years away in a different dimension from his right half, which for a couple of milliseconds it was. Len cringed from the obnoxiously loud complaints of anxious alarms as he ran to the bridge, where he found Zara desperately scanning a confusing array of equally desperate flashing and beeping readouts. He pushed past her to the main console.
Wow, we're being sucked into a wormhole centered in the laundry room, and it's growing.
Len, cut the power to the laundry.
Zara, regaining her composure, commanded.
I can't. It's already on the other side.
The other side of what?
I don't know, but we're going to find out in a second.
Every cell in Zara's body screamed as they were warped and bent in impossible ways and simultaneously passed through all 12 dimensions. Then, everything suddenly returned to relative normality, except for a faint, erratic, dull thumping against the hull that sounded to Zara like wet rags being slapped against metal. Lukey partially regained his grasp on a partially rational universe. It was a close enough match to allow him to notice the smoking remains of the machine he had seconds ago put his clothes in to dry. Grudgingly, he resigned himself to the fact that he'd be wearing mismatched socks and his PJs for the foreseeable future. Lukey punched the intercom.
Len!
Lukey's shout was lost amongst the throng of alarms competing for attention and the intense chatter of machines contemplating their fate on the bridge. A large, sort of round object filled the front view screen, quickly growing so its edges could no longer be seen. Exasperated, Len looked at Zara.
Oh no, we've materialized too close. We're going to hit.
Zara and Len desperately leapt for the crash couches and strapped themselves in.
Brace for impact,
Zara bellowed into the intercom system.
Hey, that's my...
Lukey began to complain as the hypernova jolted, shook, and rudely decelerated to zero forward motion, or, more simply put, crashed into the surface of the unknown object. Epako mustered all his courage and timidly lifted the quilted entrance a crack to look out. A hail of stretchy multicolored tubes fell in suffocating intensity, covering everything with yet another spongy layer. Suddenly, a massive flash of light lit the soft shapes of the smothered land. Then, to Apako's surprise, the sky rained a collection of different large soft objects, which pelted down just outside his shelter's entrance. Behind them, a star blazed from the heavens, plowing into the surface of the world, its impact marked by a hazy line of soft tube ejecta, vanishing off into the distance. Epako instinctively ducked his head back in, dropped the entrance cover, then nervously consulted a tattered chart pinned with sharp sticks to the woven wall. He traced the rows of known falling objects with a nervous claw until he found a cluster of extremely rare odd-shaped tubes. With a briefly lived sense of bravado, Epako shoved his head back out of the shelter and bleated for the herd to meet at dawn. All his bravery now expended, he curled himself up, hid his head under his body, and nervously waited for the sun to rise. The rings of Atma appeared to glow against the dark blue of the early morning sky, lighting a distorted path that had been carelessly punched through them. Engaged in intense discussion, Ipako and his flock didn't notice. Their focus was on the rare objects that he had seen falling from the sky the night before during the unusually heavy downpour. Having a central tube with two large tubes extending from one end, a hole in the opposing end, and two shorter tubes protruding from the sides, these were rare and mystifying indeed. They couldn't put them on their legs to keep warm, so why had the sky sent these things, they collectively wondered. Ipako looked to the flock leader, Opik, who, proudly decked out in a rare matched set of hoof and leg warmers, was clearly frustrated by his inability to discover the secrets of the new fallen objects. The Alpha, an overconfident, outspoken male from an elite flock lineage, looked at the long scar that led off to the horizon, and for no other reason than he needed to appear decisive and didn't have a clue what else to do, directed Ipako and the other low-ranking males to follow the still-warm trench to see what might have fallen from the heavens. Once they were safely out of sight, Opik picked up one of the orange objects, tried unsuccessfully to pull it over his head, then puzzled over the strange markings on it. Some kind of spiral with a cylinder in the center. The walls of the trench were melted together from the intense heat of the fireball, and its bottom exposed a dark surface that many Admazians had not seen for generations, soil and rocks. It took the better part of the morning for Apako's flock to reach the end, and there, half buried in a smoldering heap of melting tubes, was a most unusual large object. The flock immediately scuttled to a halt, many ready to bolt at the first twitch of the silvery monster. Luki pried himself out of a pile of dirty blankets that had thankfully beaten him to the end of the laundry room. Angry beyond words, he trudged out of the smoke-filled compartment towards the bridge.
Ada, what happened? What's our status?
Sir, we just experienced a moment of rapid, unexpected deceleration.
You mean we crashed?
Ada ignored Luki's comment and continued.
We were apparently swept into a wormhole that originated in the laundry area and re-emerged into normal space too close to a planet. We were forced to touch down on it, sir.
Hey, that's what I said. We crashed.
Luki huffed as he struggled uphill along halls at an oddly steep angle. When he got to the bridge, Zara and Len were huddled over displays of flashing red icons.
Wow, we're lucky the surface was so soft. There's almost no damage.
Zara pointed at one of the happier-looking screens.
Weird, though. The spectrograph is saying that the surface composition is 10% spandex, 60% nylon, 25% rayon, with trace amounts of cotton.
Len nervously scratched at some of the scraggly fur on the side of his head, just above his foremost ear. That doesn't make sense. There must have been a hull breach in the laundry room, and the sensor is just picking up the stuff that spilled out. Luki cleared his throat to get their attention, then swaggered onto the bridge in the most dignified manner he could muster. He was still in his pajamas, so the effect wasn't quite what he had intended.
Len, what did you do to the dryer? It ate my clothes.
Len's face froze, then cringed.
Luki, you never use the laundry. What were you doing in there? I wasn't finished.
Hey, I was washing my clothes. Why else would I be in that dingy part of the ship?
Didn't you read the warnings?
Yeah, I saw the sign on the door, but the warning on the dryer screen was in small print. I didn't notice it until after I hit the hyperdry button.
Zara rolled all three of her eyes.
Len, what did you do?
All I was doing was trying to improve the efficiency of the dryer by tying it to the Hypernova's engine. A mostly harmless modification, particularly if the user reads the warnings.
Len's eyes were like lasers, accusingly burning a hole in Luki.
Hey, that warning was so small I missed it. You should have made it bigger.
Give me a break. I wasn't finished. The warning didn't look good big. I was going to redesign the whole screen, but... There were some unexpected issues I needed to deal with first.
What issues?
Zara suspiciously demanded. She was starting to have a foreboding sense of deja vu. Well, for one, I didn't realize the spinning drums in most contemporary dryers were randomly creating short-lived quantum states that mimic the Casimir effect, Len stated defensively. Stunned, Zara and Luki didn't react. Come on, you know, wormholes. Most dryers occasionally create random wormholes in space-time. They only last a millisecond or two. Okay. Well, look at it this way. Who would have noticed? When dryers were first designed, no one knew much about quantum mechanics. And, at worst, the tiny random wormholes they occasionally cause might have resulted in a bit of lost laundry. Statistically, that was easily explained by operator inattentiveness. You know, the other sock you can't find that you think might have fallen out of the laundry hamper and that sort of thing. Well, they probably dropped through. Zara and Luki still didn't seem to comprehend, so Len continued. Hey, come on, how would I have known? No one else knew. When I tied the dryer to the hyperdrive exhaust, some stray exotic matter in the drive duct must have stabilized a random wormhole. That's why I added the warning, because I hadn't figured out how to filter the stuff out. After all, what were the chances of everything lining up? A random wormhole? The unpredictable presence of exotic matter in the exhaust, and Luki's highly unlikely presence in the laundry room seemed so statistically insignificant that I didn't take it into consideration when I designed the interface and posted the warnings.
So, where do all the missing socks go?
Luki timidly asked. He knew he wasn't going to like the answer. Len pondered for a bit. To the other end of those micro wormholes, I suppose. And no, I don't know where that is. Could be anywhere in space-time. Stunned silence filled the bridge until Zara snapped back into action.
Well, wherever we are, the ship isn't in bad shape. Only a few bent external sensors and clogged exhaust ports. We're lucky that the surface was so soft. Luki.
He cut Zara off before she could issue him a command.
Okay, look. I'll go out and clean out the exhaust ports. Len, figure out how we can get back to our own space-time. Zara?
Zara's fur was bristling, and she had puffed herself up. He decided that issuing her a command might be dangerous to his health.
What were you going to say?
Her voice was a barely controlled monotone.
Never mind. I'll fix the broken bridge instruments.
Great. Good call. Let's get this done, folks.
Zara snarled at Luki. Ipako and his flock stood respectfully back from the scorched metallic object. Some were still amazed just to stare at the mythic stuff called ground on the floor of the giant trench that had been excavated by the object's impact. The elders had talked endlessly about this material in the old folktales they had told the young to put them to sleep. Many pawed the new surface nervously, wondering whether they should turn and gallop or stay to face an unknown and surely horrible fate. But this was Apako's moment. All would be looking at him for direction, and despite the visible shaking of his legs, he was determined not to go anywhere. When he had bleated for the flock, he hadn't expected to be shoved into the role of second and lead a scouting mission. Although he had ambitions and had started his training, this was altogether too soon and too inappropriate. But Opik was the first in this half of the valley, and his decisions could not be challenged. At least not without challenging Opik himself. So Apako was still holding his ground, trying to consider what a first would do, when the large metal object began to hum and creak. The flock instinctively reacted, huddling tightly together. Conscious of his new position and not wanting any bad gossip about his behavior to reach the ears of Opik, Ipako took an aggressive stance, his foremost hoof prodding the ground in defiance. A hidden hatch swept open in the object's side and a ramp grew out, then settled onto the surface with a thump that caused a few random tubes hanging off odd protuberances on the great hulk to dislodge and fall to the ground. The flock anxiously scuttled back, a few of them turning to run. Ippako changed his mind and decided it was better to be a live coward than a dead leader. He willed his quivering legs to move, but they wouldn't listen and stayed firmly rooted in the ground. The entire flock was on the verge of bolting, but as the hideous creature emerged from the shadows, they collectively recognized the mismatched warmers on its two legs. Anger immediately surged through the group, giving them a renewed sense of bravery. Luki squinted in the bright orange light from the planet's K-class star, making him shade his eyes with a paw. He heard what sounded like the baying of sheep, and as his eyes adjusted, he saw that he was surrounded by a herd of five-legged herbivores, all sporting a single large and very sharp-looking horn. They bleated at him, restlessly repositioning themselves. Any false move, thought Luki, and they'll charge. He desperately tapped a translator implant in one of his ears and waited for the device to pick up a large enough sample to learn the language. The thing crackled and popped, struggling to translate the agitated bleating, while the creature closest to him stomped one of its three front legs in what Luki took for a threatening manner. The tiny subdermal device finally decided that it had learned enough and shoved a somewhat broken translation into Luki's ears.
"We've been sending you offerings requesting matching sets for generations, but all you've done is send more and more and more."
"Len, I think I know where all those socks have been going."
There was a momentary silence, then the herd angrily charged.
Thanks for listening to episode 25, The Other Story, A Hole in Space. We were a bit late in getting this episode out, but we're hoping to get back onto track next month by publishing a short story in the first half of the month, and one of our two regular webisodes in the last half. If you're interested in submitting a short story, please visit our website at makeshiftstories.com or send us an email at makeshiftstories@gmail.com. The opening and closing theme, Mars, is Podsafe Music, licensed from premiumbeat.com, and all our sound effects come from soundsnap.com. Makeshift Stories is released under a Creative Commons Attribution No Derivative Works license, so feel free to pass each episode around. Just don't change them, and remember to give us a credit. Finally, please look for new episodes of Makeshift Stories in your podcatcher around the middle and end of each month.